So my question to you is, how do you think about how a salesperson's skill set plays into making sure that person is optimizing for being a partner to a business and helping that business bring to market a product the market wants to a customer the market can identify?
So you raise a really valid point. It probably doesn't come down to the sales person, and there's reasons why. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Tech Salescraft with me, who's usually the host, James Hounslow, and Daniel Frankenstein, who is one of the lead VCs over at Jewel Ventures. So Daniel, we've had you on the show before, and we decided here at North Star that we want to do something a little bit different. And today I am handing over the host to your good self. We wanted to see if there was something that we could give back as a business to help people understand our world a bit more and see if there's anything that we can share. But the host reins are firmly in your hands for you to put me in the spotlight and ask me. Normally there's opportunity to ask me anything, which is the one question that I get asked in this. But today, this is your show. You can take it any direction you want, and I will do my best to provide you with the answers.
Love it. Well, I appreciate you having me back, and I appreciate even more so the trust you placed in me to turn the tables, so to speak. And I actually think it's an interesting change in dynamic, because as I think about it, you know, you and your team have conversations with our portfolio companies that we're not a part of. And, you know, we obviously have, you know, we're on the boards of our portfolio companies, we're involved in critical decisions that they make. But when it comes to interviewing candidates, deciding on the timing of a hire, those are conversations you're having without us. And so, you know, to me, unpacking some of those dynamics, I think would be beneficial around the table.
Love it.
I'm gonna jump right into probably the hardest thing that we as a venture investor find when it comes to hiring, particularly a revenue person, and that is timing. And there's obviously different points of view. I'll save my opinion on this for after, but when you are talking to a team looking for a salesperson, what are the signs that you think it's too soon, too early?
Too early. So that's a really great question. So for me, there's two edges. If you're looking for a founding AE, so your first AE, you're going too early if you can't prove how you've done something. You haven't got a paying customer, you haven't closed a POC. In my opinion, you are going too early, because there still should be founder-led sales at that point. Because you, when you want to hire a salesperson, a lot of those people will want to have seen how it at least has been done. Sometimes it leads you to hiring too senior too early. So you're looking for someone who's going to create strategy and things. And then you've got probably someone that you don't need to do the first bit. And then you don't necessarily have the strength in the sales. So, and also there isn't enough time. I always say that when you need to expand on something, it's usually because there's too much going on. So you've got too many POCs. There's more meetings than the founder can handle, because the founder's also got to do other jobs. So there becomes a point where there is too much going on and they need another pair of hands. That in a nutshell for me is when you are ready to hire a salesperson. There are other reasons why people may decide to do it. They're not necessarily the right one. So like someone who's better at it, kind of passing the buck, if I'm honest. And that's where you can then see where someone's got to come in and they're going to make mistakes, and it becomes a challenge to really understand what's going on. So if you've got a diary that's full of meetings, POCs that are looking to be closed out, and you haven't got the bandwidth to do it, that's when I would say that you are ready to hire. And the same goes if you're looking to increase your sales team. It might be that you're looking to enter a new territory, but I would always say that there has to be a max out of the team that you have. Otherwise, you're putting bums on seats with capital that's been raised, that not necessarily set to be able to accept those people in and build it out. So for me, hiring a salesperson is normally because there's too much workload.
And when you feel like a founding team is, in your words, kind of passing the buck, what are ways and what are strategies you use to maybe set the course back to kind of, not to use your name, but to the North Star?
Yeah. So what we tend to do is get people to see it through the eyes of the salespeople they want to hire. Why would someone do it? Who's going to come and join and do this based on where you're at? The greatest salespeople probably won't join a pre-Series A startup because they want to find the easiest route downhill. So you're looking for a special type of person who's going to do that with a special type of skill set. And then you look through it, say, you haven't been able to do it. You're not in that right place. You try and understand what's made them look to do it. And then how do they know if someone's going to be good at it? And when you start asking them what you need them to achieve, one of the, you know, the biggest things that we ask founders, which tends to take them back because they haven't really thought about it, is putting revenue to a side. What does this person need to achieve over the next 12 months? And we're saying, right, revenue is a result. So what needs to happen? What are the building blocks that need to go into it? And then we look at what skill set you need to get into those building blocks to be able to achieve the revenue. And once you start getting into that detail, if people don't know what those building blocks are, it's then why, then you ask, well, why would you do that? Would you join somewhere where mostly what they earn their money from comes from commission and we don't know what the building blocks are? So you try and get them to come to the understanding that they're probably too early. But unfortunately, most of the time, they'll go ahead and try and find someone that will do.
Well, and you know, it's something that we work on a lot, and it's not just with sales hires, it's with general sort of the building of an infrastructure for an earlier stage business. It's one of the reasons why a lot of businesses raise too much capital, you know, across 21 and early 22, was they were building an entire corporate infrastructure around a product that didn't yet have a customer. And the other side to that is not just a burn rate calculation, but it also has to do with the fact that you're basically putting barriers between the founding team who's building a product and the market that is supposed to adopt the product. Yeah. And you're essentially playing telephone, right? Yeah. And it really misses probably one of the best opportunities you'll have to be closest to your customers. And this also gets obviously to a different topic, but who those first customers are is critical. The level of feedback you're getting from them is absolutely critical. So let me, you know, kind of veer into a different direction, but back to sort of a sales candidate. There's an active debate that goes on, and I think it has, both sides have merit, that you really do need a salesperson that has functional expertise in a particular sector. If you're a cyber business, you need someone who's used to selling cyber products. If you're commercializing with financial institutions, you need someone who has those relationships. And then you have those who come down differently on those opinions. Would welcome your take specifically on where you see functional expertise playing a role when it comes to hiring the right salespeople early.
So when you're doing it early on, I think functional expertise are really important for a couple of reasons. You touched on just a moment ago, the more often than not, the product that gets designed is not the product that goes to unicorn status. And there's a lot of information that you need to be getting from those early stage conversations. And you're going to get that from functional people who understand it and who are asking the right questions and seeing it. And you're going to get the better feedback from that. So early adoption is about selling, but also trying to work out if you're selling the right thing. Are you solving the problems? And can a non-functional person do that for you as effectively? The answer is no, they can't until they're up to speed. Now, that can change if you've got a less complex sales enablement platform where things can be picked up fairly easily. There is mitigation for different circumstances, but if you're early on, I would personally say that you need to go for functional knowledge and expertise who can go out there and help you make sure that you're scoping out the right product and you're going down the right lines. Because the thing being is that these early conversations are so critical, is making sure that you've got the right person getting in there, having a conversation, knowing what questions to ask and where to drill down. You know, we call it, you know, you ask certain questions, but you're waiting for the answer so you can drill further into it, so you know exactly what's going on. And that's going to come with someone who kind of gets it. Particularly, the thing about cyber is that it's split into many different areas, but you've got to know your bit. If you're going to get time from, everybody wants time from a CISO. So there's got to be something credible that's going to get you into it. So functional experience is there. If you look at same as, you know, the world of trading. So if you've got a trading technology and you want to get in front of a trader, again, you've got to get that time, because that's, you know, everybody is, if you ask one thing, everyone will say is they're time poor. So if you want to get that time, there's got to be a reason. Later on, when you've got your team, I don't see it as so much of a need. Then it's just about good salespeople. But if you've then got a good sales enablement team around you who can coach, guide, and get people going, then it doesn't become so important. But early on, I would say important.
So I would agree with that. You know, our experience is that, you know, a first revenue hire is typically one of the first non-founder hires, or at least not on the development side of the house.
Yeah.
And so that person is a de facto, a very important business-minded feedback generator. So the more expertise they have with the, you know, the customer, the better.
Yeah.
I want to drill down on sort of the customer, because, you know, revenue early for a business can fall into three categories. Category number one is you just have a really scrappy salesperson who knows how to get something in front of the right person at the right time for the right dollar amount and get a contract done. That's one source of revenue, which unfortunately has not a huge amount of overlap with actual need of the product, if I'm being totally honest. Second form of revenue is you've just priced something so low and so reasonable that it is essentially free. You're taking a huge loss on every product that you ship out the door. And people love free stuff. People love when they can buy $100 bills for $80, right? And then the third category is kind of the holy grail of oh my goodness, you are bringing me a product I really need. You've priced it at a place where I have a willingness to pay, but you're still making a margin and have good unit economics around that sale. And okay, let's start that customer relationship. Now, unfortunately, all three of those dynamics lead to money coming into the bank account of the portfolio companies. However, only one of those three dynamics actually leads to building a great company, one that venture investors want to back. So my question to you is, how do you think about how a salesperson's skill set plays into making sure that person is optimizing for option three, i.e. being a partner to a business and helping that business bring to market a product the market wants to a customer the market can identify?
So you raise a really valid point, and it probably doesn't come down to the sales person. And there's reasons why businesses and founders jump to the three different measures that you've got there. And if I break those down into sort of like the way that we've looked at it and where we hear it, where it's almost given away, it's the excitement that their product is going to be great. Once they see it, use it, everyone's going to start using it. They don't see the value of sales people normally, and they're trying to do things cheaply.
Yep.
And saying we can do it this way and it will build up. We normally try and advise people to speak to a second time founder who's been there and done it to understand on that part. When they're like, we need to get logos, there's normally some pressure from somewhere. And that is where it's like, we've just got to get some people on board who can just get knock down some doors and get some logos on the door. And then the third part is the perfect place to be, but where you've got a leadership that's totally bought into that there's a journey that we're going on, and where you know the journey of revenue and understand that there are several milestones that you need to complete on that revenue journey, and just know that revenue is results. So, and you need to go through it, and you need to build relationships, and you need to understand what's going on. Only then are you at total peace. And probably what I would say is that there's probably a mixture of that one and the bashing the door down of logo. So you, sometimes I think you need the mix of those two in place, but you need to make sure you're surrounded by the right people that are in there that are talking to each of these salespeople. So I think largely the salespeople will get paid to do a behavior. So I always say, when you think about what you want a salesperson to do, salespeople, particularly in the US, are coin operated. So if you want them to do a certain behavior, pay them to do it. And guess what? They'll do it.
And let me, I want to press you on that, because, you know, when you're a sales rep at a bigger business and you have a product to sell or a suite of products to sell, and you have a quota to run at, you run at it. And that is kind of how it works. But for an earlier stage business, you know, your non-cash comp or your bonus comp is almost the equity component and not some big, you know, cut of the business, right, that you bring in. How do you flush out that coin-operated way of running at a target, which I think, by the way, is one of the powerful dynamics of a sales team, and one of the importance of sales management to build those incentives appropriately. I always tell our portfolio companies, you know, and to paraphrase, you know, the late Charlie Munger, you know, show me the incentive, I'll show you the result.
Yeah.
And there's no place that's more true than in sales. But when you're giving somebody equity compensation as opposed to cash bonuses based on early sales, you're basically tying them to the long-term fate of the company.
Yeah.
Salespeople are typically tied to, their long-term is annual.
Yeah.
Right. And so how do you recommend a business structure a comp package for that first revenue generating employee, where you're optimizing not for quantity of logos, but for quality of customer engagement and relationships that will lead to the opportunity to exponentially grow once you've appropriately diagnosed your vertical focus area, you understand your revenue model, you understand your sales cycle, you understand all these components that actually create the conditions to build that coin-operated sales team. But that is not the same type of activity for that early first sales hire. So help me think about how you arrange that.
Yeah. So it's a great question. And there are so many ways. I often say there are so many ways to skin a cat. And again, what it comes back to is, when you're hiring this person, is what do you need this person to achieve over the next 12, 18 months for this to be deemed successful? And then you start to put in places rewards to do that. So let's give you a really simple one. If there's a number of POCs that need to be hit because there's a certain amount of intel that we're looking to do, we're going to reward on POCs. Okay. You say, we want to get you to X amount of POCs. When you get to X amount of POCs, we'll pay you X amount, $100,000 per POC. Okay. Okay.
But I hear that, but I'm gonna push you on that one though.
Yeah.
Because quantity of POC does not indicate quality of POC, does not indicate relevance of POC, does not even connect me to the customer that I may eventually be dealing with. It's actually one of the big things that more experienced venture investors teach younger venture investors around board tables, is this idea of POC purgatory, right? There's an innovation department. There's someone who's not connected to the budget decision maker who's trying a bunch of stuff. They have no intention of buying, or maybe not no intention. Let's call it best case scenario. They haven't made a buying decision yet.
Yeah. So what I would say is there, when you have a POC, you could probably argue there's probably about three stages of POC. So it might be that they have to get to stage three, but also is there a huge amount of intel? And you know, what you're saying there is right, but are those businesses not set up for actually what they're getting out of these POCs? And also, the thing being, what I always say is one of the reasons why salespeople don't necessarily get the success is there isn't necessarily the huge amount of guidance of actually what they're being asked to do. So let's say, for instance, it's like, we're going to pay you on POCs, but this is the type of POC. To make it really simple, you can say we've got blue, green, and red. Okay. We really want the green POCs. Those are the ones that we want. And I'm going to pay you X amount for those. I'll pay you for the blue ones, but it's not worth the same as the green ones. But then it comes back to the companies knowing what they're trying to do. And if they don't, they're going too early. They're hiring too early on the salesperson. So it's knowing, it's like, what behaviors do you want? And pay the person to do that. So POCs is one example. The other example is pay heavily on commission early on for the right clients, okay? Because you want to get them through. There's revenue is going to be. So like some people will pay, look, we'll pay you for the first 2 years. The contract might be 4 or 5 years. I'm going to give you, for these first ones, I'm going to give you the life of the contract at that value, okay? Suddenly they're going to look for those ones to go and do. But what you've got to do is make sure that you're backing them and everything's in the right place for it. I always say that commissions can be changed every year. Okay. And arguably, there's different situations, but as every year your company gets older, it should become easier. Okay. Sure. So there's less reward. So it's thinking about actually, if this person does this for me, what's the value to my company? And saying, actually, I will pay out on that.
Well, and you know, I think what this also uncovers, and I think, you know, this is something we talk to our portfolio companies about on the regular. Hiring salespeople does not mean you are disengaging as a founder from sales.
Yeah.
It actually means the opposite. And I think most people simply assume that, oh, I hired that salesperson, they're going to run sales. I'm going to go back to my home doing product.
Yes.
And I'm just going to wait for the contracts to come in.
Yeah.
And that is such the opposite paradigm of successful businesses. Founders have to be even more involved, essentially now as a product support tied at the hip to that new salesperson to make sure that they're helping with the right customer diagnosis, that they're making sure that these are the right POCs. Because by the way, if they're wrong, it's the product team that bears the brunt of that. Sales guy got paid. Right? The product team has to start fulfilling product for customers that are irrelevant or customers that are not exactly using the product the way that you intended it to be, or maybe you're missing the opportunity to bring to market a better product that is, you know, solving maybe an adjacent or a different problem. But I think the major takeaway for me, based on your answer, and it confirms what we, you know, preach heavily at the portfolio company level, and that is founder engagement, even more so in sales, especially when you hire that first new person.
And a lot of what we say to founders when they get their first salesperson is, have you spoken to a sales lead? Do you understand? Because you're like, take away the fact that you're a founder, you're a CEO, you're a sales leader. You need to have weekly cadence meetings with these people. And you know, some of the best sales leads I've sat down and speak about, they say, right, I have weekly catch-ups. I don't talk about what's in the CRM because guess what? I can see the CRM. I know that. I don't need to go and have a 45-minute conversation about what's in the CRM. What I do is I've seen it and I go there and I say, what's your biggest challenge I can help you with right now? And you start asking these questions that which means that you're going to get information and intel and insight to help these people out. But it's like, are you having weekly catch-ups about where everything's at? You know, time to deal. That's one of the biggest things that people start looking at and trying to capture as much data that you have. So are you sitting and having these weekly catch-ups in the right way so that you're moving everything forward? You understand where everything's at? Because you're right. A lot of them think, I've hired this person. I'm paying them so much money that basically they're just going to bring it through. And it's like, and I often bring it back to, I talk Premiership football all the time, because there's people there that are paid vast amounts of money, but they're all coached, they're all developed, they're all sat, they all have their defense, midfield, striker meetings. They all know what they're all spoken about, what they do when they've not got the ball, when they've got the ball. There's everything that's going on, but they're paid a huge amount of money. It's not like they've gone, right, Haaland, we're now paying you £300,000 a week. Just turn up on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock and I expect you to do what I told you to do. Doesn't work like that. And that's the same with salespeople, that it doesn't work like that. And also early on, the business is changing all the time. And the founder should be having conversations still with the client. They should be bringing information to the salesperson saying, I did this, worked. What did you do that worked? And working with each other. But it quite often doesn't work that way. And it does be seen as, right, I've hired someone to plug that gap for me.
So to the hiring process, you know, you're involved, you know, in some of these interviews and in some of these early conversations between candidate and company. What are a couple of red flags in those conversations where you're just like, yeah, this is absolutely not going to work? And on the other side, what are some things where you see a conversation going a particular way, or you see some questions that are going one way or the other where you're like, you know what? This is actually a pretty good match.
So when we're talking to a candidate, or when we're talking to a candidate about a company, or when a company's talking to a candidate?
Either way. I mean, you know, I think I think it's interesting both in terms of what gets a candidate excited about an opportunity or what would turn that candidate off. And furthermore, what gets a company excited, right? And or what has a company saying, you know what, let's keep looking.
So if we look at a red flag from my perspective, when I'm talking to a candidate, and particularly in sales, if we're looking at sales, is a candidate that can't tell me their numbers straight away. Great.
Sales. And their numbers in terms of like their previous job and what their quota was, and or
like their quota was what they achieved around it. It's really important. And if someone doesn't want to talk about that, it just raises a red flag around it. So that's.
And is that something you can ever verify? Because, you know, actually, we work primarily in the Israeli ecosystem. It's a very small ecosystem. Pretty easy to verify someone's experience, someone's pedigree, whether or not, you know, they're, you know, a straight shooter when it comes to some of this stuff. In bigger, you know, environments like the US, that's a harder thing to do. You know, how do you think about the vetting process?
Yeah. So I'd tell you how we try and do it. So there's no kind of like one way that wins, but there's one way that we do it, and there's one way that we get our clients to do it. And when we talk about it, remember I said we ask a question and then we drill down on it. So we ask them, we get them what their number was. And then we ask them what their biggest deal was in that. And then you ask another question and start the maths, either adds up or it doesn't. So you start drilling them in down to the detail. How many deals did they do? What did they do? What did they earn from it? So you start to understand if it does, are they able to tell it, or is there, you know, from what I've done this for 20 years now. So I like to think 8 times out of 10, I can smell a kidder. And then one of the things we always say to our, I learned this a long time ago from a great sales leader who always asked them to talk through their biggest deal. What was your biggest deal? Walk me through it. How did you do it? What was your involvement? The reason why they're doing it is saying, right, was it a lead that was passed to them? Did they walk into it halfway through the process? Did they generate it all themselves? When you go through that and you hear that, you say, who was the champion? You get a name. There's your reference point, right? Everything that they've told you points, and that's who. And then you say to them, if I call this person, are they going to verify what you've just said? So you're getting the intel, you're getting the information, you've got a point of a reference where you say, I'm going to call and I'm going to repeat this conversation to this person. Are they going to back it up? So that's it is hard, because as I say, the US, it's huge, and there's no bulletproof way. But by us asking just 2 or 3 questions, you can kind of get a flavor if it's right. And then by giving the client, say, you talk about this, and if you talk about this, you're going to get some information there, which is going to help you.
It's one of those things where, you know, there is a real human element to this, right? It's not something you can just throw it into, and this is, I'm telegraphing where my next question's going, and I don't know what our timing is, but it may take us over to be our last. And we find that too, right? There's no substitute for a human kicking the tires on something, feeling something out, whether you have a detector that something isn't as it seems. You know, that's hard to do without that human component. So with that as the backdrop, obviously, we are continuing to go through an AI revolution, and there are a number of AI products that are looking specifically at the sourcing and, you know, specifically at the world of recruitment and talent, right? Help me understand your view on technologies and on how, what you think your business is going to look like 5 years from now.
It's really interesting because the recruitment world that we're in now, when I first started in recruitment 20 years ago, LinkedIn was kind of just coming about, nowhere near the kind of the form that it's in now. So we only had adverts that we could use to put out, didn't really get much from ad response. So it was having to utilize the phone so much to get through to people to try and get someone's mobile to come through to desk to speak to them later on. Roll through now and technology makes it, you know, with LinkedIn Recruiter, I can get a message to the man on the moon if he exists. So technology now plays a huge part.
Well, you have to work a lot less hard now to send somebody a note, which means the barrier to entry to send that note is much lower, which means people are getting a lot more traffic.
That's it. So then you've got to work out if candidates are getting hit or potential candidates are getting hit with X amount of messages, then how do you make yours stand out from it? So technologies will play a part in many ways in terms of you trying to have a community and using technology to keep a community alive. I think before, like, a network was, I knew so-and-so, you have this network of people. I think a networks are much bigger now and people want to absorb information. So it's using technology to get that information to people so that you get seen as someone that adds value. So when they're ready to make a move, they can do that. I think there is technology that can help for more hands-on kind of blue collar work, probably developers as well. I think you can start to predict a turn of when candidates might be thinking that now's the time to move. There is tools on LinkedIn where people do certain things and they put their self as open to work that certain people can see. So again, technology can pull all that in together. With my world, 99% of the candidates that people want to hire will not be someone who's got an open to work symbol over them. They're killing it. They're making lots of money and they haven't really got eyes over their shoulder. So that's why using technology to be, have those people in your network. One of the things that I always say that, you know, I hear people say, like, who's in your network? Who can you get us conversations with? And I said, like, the thing being for me is that I don't sell on the fact that I've got lots of connections. What I can do is tell you is that most people within my network will have a conversation because I say you should talk to this person because I'm a trusted advisor and we're in. And where technology helps me on that is getting the insight and information to people constantly. So if you think in my world right now, the people that I need to keep at the forefront are people like yourselves on the VC side, the founders, the sales leaders, and then the 2.1 billion A players of salespeople that there are out there who are, you know, the opportunities in the US is huge for software sales. Sure. They're like, if I sat there and said to a salesperson, I've got the best thing out there, they'll be like, really? And if they believe me, I'll be like, how are you believing me? Because there's so much stuff, so much cool stuff, so much not cool stuff, but still provides, you know, a really good need and people get really paid well on. So technology will help me keep those people together, talk to those people and keep an eye on what they're effectively doing. And that's what's really important.
Well, I think I would sum it up by saying, as long as there are opportunities that are not yet posted/public, which are typically the best opportunities. Yeah. And as long as there are candidates who aren't actively looking, who are typically some of the better candidates, the human touch will be required to match those two.
It will do. And also, from what I've seen, the better the person, the more often they'll want. If they don't know the person, so if you've got candidates A, clients B, if they don't know that person, they want to go between. Because they want to be able to have a conversation with someone about it. What's it all about? They want that third party. Where it happens directly, there seems to be, we shield a lot. Like, clients will say stuff to us that they want to say to the candidate and we'll be like, let's not say that. And sometimes the candidate will be like, I need this, like tell them. And it's like, we'll go back, we'll have a conversation, but actually we'll explain that your demands are unrealistic and not heard of. So there's a really valuable part that we play as a go-between as well as getting the person interested into the business and try and make it as fluid as possible.
Last question, and this gets back to, show me the incentive and, I'll show you the result. Help people understand, how do you guys get paid? Obviously, most of us are familiar with the general recruitment way of operating, but if I'm a startup and I'm listening to this, wanting to engage you, how do I think about how I pay you for your services? And two, overlay over that, how that provides for you the proper incentive to find the right long-term candidate.
Yeah. So we work, particularly with early stage businesses, we decided that we would only work on a contingent basis. So that means that we only get paid if someone starts in the business. So, and the reason why we decided to do that, we have done it on retained, but what we worked out is that these startups need money in the business. And if we've got a trust and we've got an exclusive and we know where we are, then we know that we're going to fill it and we trust that a role is not going to be pulled away. So we run on a contingent basis. So the bottom line is that what I say to people is that a recruiter has got more enthusiasm. Remember, they're salespeople. So they've got more enthusiasm to fill a role if it's exclusive. So some leaders think, I can't afford to give it someone exclusive. I can't trust that. I need to give it out to X amount of agencies. So just to give you some insight into what happens when you do that is that everybody likes to work off numbers. So let's say that we have a hit rate that we only fill on a contingent where there's multiple agencies involved, 1 in 3 jobs. That means that if you've got multiple agencies, we need X amount of jobs that we need to service. Okay. What that also means is if I'm working, say, with you, Daniel, you've got this role, and the biggest thing that we need to do with salespeople is make them fail. Right? That's the biggest thing in the interview process, is that we've got to try and find a way to make them fail. Therefore, if they don't fail, we know we've got the right person and we work together on that. If I've got 2 or 3 other agencies, suddenly my mindset is I've got to get an offer for this candidate before someone else. So your whole process changes to, rather than trying to get this person to fail to make sure they're the right one, to, well, I know what Daniel's going to ask, so answer it this way. This is what he wants to hear. And you kind of puppeteer someone through the process. And the bottom line also is the lower you pop down the rate, okay, there is always someone else that's going to pay more money. And, again, we talk about people being coin operated. You will get what's left. That's the bottom line behind it. So if you drive it down, you'll get what's left and you get what you pay for. Hiring salespeople is expensive. It's a necessary, because if you it's the enabler to your business to get to where you want it to be.
Yeah. And I think, we work a lot early on with primarily folks who have had little to no sales experience and mostly spent their time in the product world. Yeah. And I think there's a misnomer that a great product sells itself.
Yeah.
And even the most amazing, most successful businesses with the most incredible products need a sales team.
Yeah.
And furthermore, our world is full of subpar products that just simply had a better sales team. And so there's a lot of reason to, and a lot of data to recognize that your sales team, who you hire, how you manage them, the incentive plans you create for them, the culture that you build for them is a critical, and at times the most critical, force multiplier for your business.
100%. And that's a big message that we talk about. An average salesperson in a company that's doing well against a great salesman at a business that's less well known, you want that great salesperson and they're going to do more. An average salesperson with a great product does not mean that product's going to be sold and you're going to miss stuff and it doesn't work. So it is so critical. It's so critical to understand what it is you're trying to achieve. And, one of the biggest parts that we didn't really get a chance to touch on is understanding personalities. That's one of the biggest things that get missed, is that people hire on skill set alone. and they're like, can you do what you did that over there and everything will be great, and without realizing that there's a mismatch. So
I get that 100%. Well, I'm so appreciative that you gave me the freedom to grab the mic from you for a little bit and ask you some questions. You know, these are critical questions we discuss at the portfolio company level during board meetings, and they're also tough things to get right. So I really appreciate your perspective on this and appreciative for your time to have this discussion.
No worries. Well, I was super excited to have you on and doing it. And the bit I would say when you're talking to your portfolio is just tell them before you go out and do it, know exactly what you're looking for and why you're doing it.
Yep. Okay.
And then don't be scared to get it wrong, because guess what? It's okay, but get it wrong quickly. And so if you know what you're trying to achieve, you can understand if somebody is wrong, and then you just knock them out and you go again. There is no shame in that. But what you got to do is don't be scared to make a decision, but do your homework first. And then you can say, well, do you know what? I did it. We tried to make it work and we got it wrong, but we'll learn from that and we'll go again quickly. We don't leave them in, because I've not met a founder or salesperson who says, I wish I'd given that person more time. They'll normally tell you lots of stories that I knew I should have, but I kept them.
Well, so, and that's, you know, well, you know, we say in the venture world, when we're thinking about our investments, you know, fail early and fail cheap. The longer you continue with a bad partnership, the worse it gets. And if you're going to take a swing, you know, there's no reason to, I know you use football analogies, I use baseball analogies, but you know, if you're up to bat, take a swing. You're not going to score runs with a bunch of bunts.
No, love it. I really appreciate all the time you give us. I know your time is extremely valuable, but really appreciate it all. And I hope that a little bit of what I've said there will help you and your portfolio and anyone else who's listening.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Awesome.